You're listening to Seek Up, the Yoga Inspiration Show, right here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. I'm Kina McGregor, your host, world-renowned yoga teacher, author of multiple books, and founder of Om Stars, the world's first online TV channel. Get ready to raise your vibration and dive into the spiritual lessons from the yoga tradition. Even if you've never practiced yoga before, you'll find kernels of wisdom to help make your world a happier and more peaceful place. So let's dive in. Let's seek up and leave with a little dose of inspiration.
Asatoma Satkamaya.
Asatoma Satkamaya.
Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya.
Tamasoma Jyotir Gamaya.
Mrityorma.
Mrityorma.
Amritam Gamaya.
Amritam Gamaya.
So this little chant, it means help me go from untruth to truth, from not knowing to knowing. Help me move from darkness to light, as in I'm stuck in a rut towards an illuminated place. Help me get rid of the poison that I have accumulated over this lifetime and move me to the Amrita, the kind of divine elixir of knowledge and healing. So I thought to start with this today because we wanted to talk a little bit about what it means to be a teacher in this tradition of Ashtanga Yoga that we have. So first of all and foremost, from a, like a root perspective of yoga, like the traditional perspective, we are working within what's called the Guru Shishya Parampara. We are working within a system that we call the Guru Shishya Parampara. So Guru means a great teacher, a grand teacher. Guru means the one that removes darkness. Also means the heavy one. Not just in fat necessarily, but as in someone that has great substance, great weight to them. Shishya is a disciple or a student. The old-fashioned, old-time Indian way of learning was that there was someone that was knowledgeable, and then there was someone that wasn't but wanted to learn. So that person, that disciple, that student would move in with the knowledgeable person, would move in with the guru, and maybe live there with the guru and his family. Back in those days, it was mostly men. That was in the Indian tradition. But in the Guru Shishya Parampara, it doesn't necessarily need to be yoga. It could also be that you want to study astrology, Indian astrology. It could also be that you want to study music or dance or anything, philosophy, anything like that. So the structure in those days was there was not schools like we have today. There was not universities and educational institutions like that. So there was the Gurukula. That was the setup where the guru was teaching, and he had 1, 2, 3, 4 students, however many there was out there. So there's different kinds of gurus, and I think that the one that I am most inspired by is the one that we call a Kalyana Mitra. So what does it mean? Kalyana means someone that guides, and Mitra means friendly or friend. So the friendly guide, so the guru as friendly guide. When we're working in the yoga system, we're also working with a particular type of aspect of living. The yoga guru is a disciplinarian. The yoga guru is there as a disciplinarian. So we pay a lot of attention to that relationship between the student and the teacher, where the student is obedient. That's how George used to say, good student is obedient student. So the idea is that the student is obedient and that the guru is willing to share. Those two are very important. So it is stated many places in Indian, old Indian literature, like in Upanishads and so forth, that humility is the stepping stone to knowing anything, to getting informed, to getting anywhere, to progress. And the idea, of course, is that if we are thinking that we are knowledgeable already, how can we add more knowledge? But if we think, I don't know, please give me the information, then if we have that curiosity and that desire to learn, then we can actually learn. So the proposition in yoga is come in to the shala not knowing. I didn't do much martial arts, but a little bit in the past. And a friend of mine had just returned from Japan, and he was learning Aikido. And he was a black belt in one style of Aikido. And he went to a new shala in Tokyo to learn to do Aikido there. And the first thing he did was he took off his black belt and put white belt. So black belt signifies I am master. And white belt signifies I am beginner. So he put white belt, so when he entered, he showed I know nothing. If he had showed up with a black belt, it would have been a challenge to the teacher. That would, in that tradition, be that he comes to challenge the teacher to want to fight, to see who is better there. Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that in the Japanese martial arts, many of them, maybe perhaps all of them, this is how it is. I think it's a really beautiful way, very formalized, very beautiful, almost poetic way of going about it. And I wish that we had belts in yoga like that, that we could take off. But we do not. So the guru's job is not just to make us healthy. The guru's job is to help us be physically healthy, yes, but also spiritually healthy or psychologically healthy, mentally healthy, emotionally healthy. So the job of the guru is so much bigger than your average university teacher. You go to university and you learn, you take business module there. But teacher's job is to get you better at earning some money so you can take care of your life. For the guru, it is much more than that. It is to teach us students what it means what to be alive, what it means to be a human being, and what we need to hang on to and develop further, and what we need to let go of and discard to grow as spiritual entities, spiritual human beings. So it's much bigger. By the end of the day, the yogic perspective is that we're trying to liberate the soul. It's like a really ambitious project, right? So, and we start with putting your leg behind the head because we think that helps, but that's a whole other conversation. So I thought to read a little quote here from an Upanishad, which says, the true teacher is a master in the field, in his field of knowledge, well-versed in the ancient texts, such as the Vedas and the Upanishads and so forth. If we look at that from a Western perspective, maybe we also need to know something about running a yoga shala or some business. We need to know something about anatomy, perhaps, and so forth. We need to know something about the environment we function within, such as these days, there's some things that seem to me that's very important, such as trauma sensitivity. We're all learning that even though most people look fine, some underneath, there's some trauma for most people underneath. So we need to begin to tune a little bit into that and so forth. There's things to consider.
Could you move mic, as you're saying?
Yeah, this is better. Can you hear better? Let me try it down here.
Sorry.
No, it's perfect. How about this? Can you hear? I just changed it again. And in here, you're all right, people in the machine, you can hear. Okay. So the true teacher is a master in his field of knowledge. He's well-versed, or she is well-versed in the necessary texts. He's free from envy, knows yoga, lives a simple life, that of a yogi, and has realized the knowledge of Atman, the soul, that there is more to living than just a material object, a material thing. So when we say material in yoga, we don't mean necessarily, you know, the Mercedes-Benz. We mean this body, that there is more than the body, that's more than my physicality, that's more than what I think, and that's more than my emotion. What is beyond that? What is that thing beyond that? Well, you choose your word. You pick your word on that. You call it God, you call it the soul. Patanjali, who wrote the Yoga Sutras, he calls it Anya. That means the other. That other thing, that's all. Very kind of liberal, very open about it. So we can choose what we're going to call ourselves. A little more quoting here from the Upanishads. The guru is one who initiates, transmits, guides, illuminates, debates, and corrects a student in the journey of knowledge and of self-realization. The attribute of the successful guru is to help make the disciple into another guru, one who transcends himself, one that becomes a guru unto himself, driven by inner spirituality and sound principles. So sound principles, what is that? So when we look at yoga and we talk about what is important to be a decent human being, we look for the Ashtanga yoga, the jewel of Patanjali's teaching, which starts with yama niyama. So if we want to know what it means to be an ethical person in yoga, then the yamas is where we look first, the niyamas is where we look second. And it's very simple. We look to those for inspiration. We look for those to measure ourselves up if our actions are what they're supposed to be. It's very simple. We won't go over them now. You have heard them 10 times before. You will hear them 200 times more. So we will leave it at that right now. Couple more things. So for me personally, when I grew up and I went to school, I grew up in the suburbs outside of Copenhagen, Denmark. And it was a very average school I went to. And some of my teachers was awesome. And some of my teachers were not so awesome. And I was a kind of lazy student. So I tended to fare well in the faculties where the teacher was inspiring. And the faculties where the teacher was not inspiring, I couldn't find the ignition in myself to rise above the teacher's ability to teach in a inspiring manner. Unfortunately, I wish I could. So later on growing up, I realized that was a big hindrance for me. That when the teacher was not inspiring, when I was in front of someone that I was not inspired by, I would just like not be interested. And that meant that all the knowledge that that person potentially had would just fly straight over my head. I wouldn't get it at all. So personally, I made that a point to make sure to not just wake up when the situation was fun to do so. Does that make sense? In that way. From my point of view, an inspiring teacher can create so much transformation in the student. The student can just lean into that. And I'm sure that all of you have encountered more inspiring, more transformative teachers in your childhood and less transformative teachers. And if you're going on to be a teacher in yoga, I would say, figure out how you can teach this information with the most swung, with the most impact and power. So here's a couple of things that I think is important for a teacher. And that is to have curiosity and passion for the subject, that we ourselves love what we're teaching. We are invested in that. And then that there's a genuine care for the people that we teach, the genuine care for whoever is in front of us. And then I think it's important for a teacher to inspire us and to make us interested and curious in playing with ideas, to think deeply, to take challenges within the field of study, and perhaps even take up, be so inspiring so our students want to take up a career in this, whether it's yoga or whatever it is. But of course, the most important for the teacher is not just to inspire the student and have a good time together. We see that a lot in yoga these days. What is even more important is that what is taught is substantial and useful and leads somewhere. So the subject matter must be useful, and the style with which we pass it on, hopefully, as inspiring as possible.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck, fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Kiss me quick. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries and cream.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Anything you want to add? A little more to say, then I can also just finish.
Well, I think that the question of teacher versus guru is something that has to be flushed out by all of us. You know, when we conflate the two and we think that everybody who stands at the front of a yoga room is a sort of enlightened master, we're doing a disservice to ourselves and a disservice to that human being who's on the path as well. So in kind of our contemporary world of kind of equals along the path, seeking spiritually, it's important to recognize that there's a meeting point between yoga teacher and yoga student, and that that is a meeting between equals. At the same time, there is also an acknowledgement, perhaps from the student's perspective, that the teacher has some experience that they don't have. In our Ashtanga yoga method, there for many, many years was no official kind of training. And there was this almost mystical experience of Patabi Joyce saying when someone was ready to teach. And there were people who had been, who were very qualified by all of the standards that Tim has just outlined. You know, they've studied the text, they've, you know, maybe they're even teaching, but they don't tell him because they were afraid or something like that. And then he never gave them sort of his permission to teach. And it was just kind of this mysterious thing. They'd been coming to India and practicing with him for 10, you know, someone that was there for 15 years, and they just never got that formal approval from Patabi Joyce. And then the next, and someone else would come and they'd be practicing for a much shorter period of time. And then he would tell them, now you have to teach. You know, and so there was this kind of mysterious question of what are really the qualifications, and can they be measured in kind of a checklist? And so here we have a kind of a schism between a traditional methodology, meaning a lineage-based practice, which comes from the Guru Shisha tradition, that is sort of trying to bring into the tangible the intangible. So when Tim talked about spending time with your teacher,
there's something that is sort of that is presumed within that Tim talks about a lot, which is called the transmission. And this is when you spend time around someone, they rub off on you. And they rub off on you in ways that your mind and your conscious mind isn't aware of. And it's that kind of intangible kind of feeling that you get from spending a long time very close to the bright flame of a teacher that then transforms you. And this is something that you know, you can check off all of the boxes of the information. And if that transmission hasn't kind of penetrated into the heart space, then all the information in the world is kind of not enough to really qualify one as someone who can hold the flame of the lineage, particularly in the Ashtanga method. So when we think about all of the qualifications, we have to remember the intangible. We have to remember that there's something else that's kind of going on. It's hard to put our fingers on, but it's this feeling of, you know, you want all the information that's out there. At the same time, if you think like 3,000 years ago in India, you know, there was a strong Guru Shisha tradition and there were no anatomy lessons, right? There was no app on our phone that would help us find the piriformis and figure out what it did, right? And there was no, there was no kind of formal training in that way and not as much analytical information about the body as we have today. And yet the knowledge was there. And so we have to think about that and respect that. When I came into the practice, the thing that most struck me was actually how little technical information I was given. And that was the atmosphere that I came into the practice with. Over the last more than 20 years, the Western world has given a lot of emphasis on the analytical dissection of what the physicality of the asanas are and what in terms of the parameters of how we should operate a yoga business and be yoga emissaries in our world. There's been a lot of kind of dissection about that from an ethical standpoint, from a community standpoint, from a social, a social awareness standpoint. And that's all well and good and very useful. And at the same time, that is somehow still this analogy, like a finger pointing at the moon. You know, it's something that will help us, but it's not necessarily the sort of heaviness that Tim was talking about when he said that the guru represents kind of a heaviness. And that heaviness is also density. And that heaviness is also like a weight that kind of brings us out of the unfocused mind. So again, when we come back to what are the qualifications of the practice, there's to teach the practice, you can have all of the information and still not be qualified to teach. And this is why Patabi Joyce always said, no teacher trainings, you know, because some person can go through a training and they have all the information, but they're still not qualified. And another person can never do a training, but because of the experience that they've gone through in their practice, they have some foundation to teach from. So I was there in a conference when someone asked Patabi Joyce, why no teacher trainings and what qualifies you to be a teacher in the Ashtanga method? And his answer was that, not in perfect English, obviously, because he didn't speak such perfect English, but he said essentially he was looking for when the student had gone through something, some transformation. Here's where they started. So he saw them when they started and he wanted to see them go through something and transform and then become something sort of more awakened, you could say, with more light. So he wanted to see them use the tool of the practice in such a way so it helped them. And that created the firm foundation of them to be able to teach. And the more that the teacher experiences, the more qualified they are, the more they go through it. And for those of us who are doing this course over the last week, Tim used a word yesterday called bhavana. And this is a Sanskrit, a Pali word that's very closely related to a concept of knowledge. And in this concept of bhavana, we're interested in getting close to the experiential feeling base of the knowledge. And the way that this comes across is that there's no intellect that can be a substitute for that which we experience to be true and which we get the feeling for in our bodies and in our minds. And so we keep practicing until we get that. And then within that framework, we kind of add on extra stuff that can make us more effective, you know? And this is where we have some of the methodology that I think Tim is going to talk about next.
Yeah, so we were just spending a week here with 25 people, inspired people from many places in America and the world. We thought to talk just very basic about what does it require specifically to go in and teach Ashtanga Yoga. We thought that might be interesting. And we think that there's very few hard points that in Ashtanga Yoga actually to get to know, to learn to teach it. But some of the things that we think is very important is that we must have our own practice well established. It must be there. Because if I am going to try to bring Amy through some kind of transformation, I must have gone through some kind of transformation myself with it. I cannot just have read Kino's wonderful book and then learned the asanas because my body was able to do them, and then that's it. It's just not enough. There needs to be a deeper experience about the practice in that way. Adding to that, there needs to be a deep understanding, experience of the goodness that is within this method. And that there is an experiential relationship to the goodness, to the benefits that this practice can bring, and that we have, so to speak, understanding and faith in it. Because we know it, because we've tried it. We know this is good stuff. That's why we push it on to the next person. That must be there. Then we have to memorize what is memorizable. We have to memorize what there is to memorize, such as the names of the asanas, the order of the asanas, if we're breathing in here, we breathe out there, where the breathing lies. We call it the vinyasa system. We have to know that. And then we have the counts. When we start to know the counts, ekam, dvei, or so forth, we begin to understand a little bit deeper what is the intention with this transition, and that transition starts to dawn on us. Then, of course, we need to know the opening and the closing mantras. Why? Because the opening and the closing mantras is basically paying respect. It is saying, I am grateful to everyone that has walked this path in front of me. I am grateful for this information that is so dear and so ancient, that it has made it through time, through all these people that have taken it on. And now through the teacher in front of me, it is being presented to me so I can learn that. That there's a basic respect and appreciation and conscious reminding ourselves that that's what's going on. That's the opening mantra. And the ending mantra is a metta mantra, which is where we say, all this good stuff that come to me, I hope it will come to everybody. And you can even maybe add to that, I will do my part, that this information is available to more people than just myself. See how much I benefit. I hope also you will benefit everybody in every part of the world, in every realm of the universe, we say. Is that? By the end of the day, perhaps that gratefulness and respect for the lineage is, in my opinion, I think in both of our opinion, absolutely necessary. It's like you kind of have to live and breathe it. You kind of have to feel that. How do you get that? So I think one of the best way to get it is if you have curiosity about these teachings, if you have curiosity about anything that has to do with yoga, and specifically since we are in Ashtanga Yoga, that has to do with Ashtanga Yoga, and start from one end. And I can tell you this, that the more you learn, the less you know. In the beginning, you think, oh, I just need to know this and this and this, and then I'm cool. Then you learn this, you realize there's a reason for that, there's another text I need to read, there's another asana I need to learn. And the more we study, the more we realize how vast the sea of knowledge is within yoga, and it just never ends. When I teach, been taught the Yoga Sutras by a man in India. His name is Nagaraja Rao. He's an amazing teacher. He's now 80. He's been teaching his entire life. And he is celebrated and almost famous around the world for his teachings. And we were just in Mysore, and one of my fellow students asked, how did you come to teach Sanskrit and yoga philosophy? Was that a calling for you? And he said, no, I was born in a very poor family, and life was very difficult. My father was not there. I was there with my siblings and my mother. It was very hard. I was told that I could study in the university if I took up Sanskrit studies. They were for free, and you got free food in the cantina. So by doing that, he had the possibility to study and eat every day. So by his studies, he could later support his family, and he could eat every day while he did that. That's why he did it. Now he's like considered one of the greatest that there is in these studies. Anyhow, but there's no doubt about that Professor Rao, over the time, he developed a great curiosity for it all. Then I think, in our opinion, if you want to dabble in Ashtanga yoga, you gotta make it to India, to Mysore, at least once, just to see if you like it. These days, who is the head of our lineage? That is Sharad. Why? Because Patabi Joyce put him there. So there's also Manju Joyce, which is Patabi Joyce's son and Sharad's uncle. There's also Saraswati, which is Patabi Joyce's daughter and Sharad's mother, and so forth. But Patabi Joyce, who is kind of like the lineage holder from Krishnamacharya, passed that lineage holding on to Sharad. So in our opinion, is like there's amazing teachers out there in the West also, and in India also. But this is the flame of the flame. This is where the whole thing initiated, and this is who's supposed to take this on, the core of this tradition on. So at least if you practice this, if you want to teach this, if you want to coach people with this, at least make one pilgrimage to see if you like it. And if you don't like it, you don't need to go back. But if you like it, you can go again. It's possible. So, yeah, I think that's what I had to say. And there's, of course, more to know, but I think at least these are the basics. This is...
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
A for horses, B for mutton, C more cheeks, dig for victory. E bar gold.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better.
Marks and Spencer.
Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com.
T for two.
Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
I would also like to add that, you know, something in you has brought you here to this moment. So something in you has kind of risen up, almost like a kick from within, that said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to practice. That's on you. And without that kick from within, there's no lineage, because it's the students that make it possible for the grace of that river of teachings to continue to flow. So by acknowledging that within yourself, you can recognize, oh, I'm already on the path. I don't need to do anything else. How many other people are there right now in this city that are doing something else with their Saturday morning? You know, all over the world, people are not practicing yoga. All over the world, people are recovering from hangovers. And, you know, they've taken decisions that have led them off the spiritual path. So it's this kick from within that you answer. And it's this idea that, you know, all of the teaching of these great teachers and this knowledge, this river of grace is there. But the moment that the student feels, oh, I'm curious about that. I'm curious about going to Mysore. Or I want to do, what's this Ashtanga method? Let me try it for a month and see what happens. And then when that kick from within kind of gets more fed, and then you say, well, I want to do another month. Oh, I want to do it again. Well, who's this person in India that I heard about? I can't remember the name. It sounds weird, but so how do I go? What's that? When you feel that questioning within you, that is the sort of the spirit within yourself that's kind of yearning for more. And so to answer that curiosity, to go in with that, is sort of you saying yes to the spark of knowledge and intelligence within yourself. And, you know, there are some really interesting things about that some of the great teachers of the past say about, you know, the requirement on the students. So it's very important to acknowledge that this lineage is powerful. This is powerful. This isn't like, let me do some ab exercises on Saturday. There's something intangible and transmissible within this lineage-based practice that has the power to change your life. And that sounds really positive on one level, but we don't realize that we're very attached to the life that we might have. And even though we think, well, I want to change my life, I want to become more enlightened, I want to have curiosity about the lineage, I want to go to India, but we don't realize, oh, well, what will happen? Then suddenly we'll get new kicks from within, you know, new kicks from within that might suddenly change your life. We might realize, oh, I want to go to India for 2 months. What do I have to do that? Well, I need to make some changes with my work, with my family. Oh, I want to be closer to a teacher. So then maybe you need to move. And then you think, oh, goodness, well, I want to eat differently so that my body feels really good for the practice. Oh, no, I need to change my diet. Oh, I want to learn these yoga sutras. Oh, wait a minute, they're in Sanskrit? I need to learn Sanskrit? Oh, help me, Lord, you know? Wait a minute, I want to practice every day? So what time do I need to go to bed to practice every day? Oh, goodness, I need to make serious life changes. And then 6 years later, your life has changed. And you gave up a lot along that path. So you will pay in some ways for that transformation. And that payment is kind of the qualification of your teaching, you know, your willingness to give to yoga.
This is what David Swinson called, yoga will destroy your life.
Yeah. You know, so be careful, right? So there's this other, other idea that there's a moment when the student is ready. And until that moment, the teaching cannot happen. There's a moment. And we you know, that moment is something that can't be rushed, can't be forced. When the moment that the student is ready, then at that moment, everything starts to fall into place. So when we think about who should do yoga, it's everybody that has that kick from within. That says, oh, I want to do this. And then that person, they do it. And then the teacher's job is to meet that inspiration as much as possible and to pull out all of the tools in their toolbox and figure out, well, what's going to inspire this student? What's going to inspire that student? And how do I meet that individual? Maybe this one, they don't really care about Sanskrit, but they love backbending. All right, let's work on that for a little bit. This one hates backbending and loves Sanskrit. Awesome. Let's go there for a little bit. One responds to a lot of attention. Another one is like, leave me alone. I just want to be in the back of the room. So the versatility of the experience of having gone through all of that and being that student at different times and being able to hold that kind of totality of experience is so important along the path.
I think we could even say that the students, the potential for learning is proportional to the teacher's ability to feed their curiosity. Does that make sense? There's so many aspects we can learn in here. And if the student is curious about something, if we as teachers, we can feed into that, then the student will learn more and faster than if we insist on a different curriculum.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. And especially keeping within the parameters of the tradition.
Okay.
Right. So then this is one thing that Tim mentioned before is, you know, the teacher has a loving attitude towards the student, but we have to understand, you know, that that loving attitude isn't always like just, you know, roses and rainbows. Sometimes a loving attitude is, you know, look, your curiosity about trying yoga while, you know, having wine is maybe not the best option, right?
Goats. So,
yeah, goats. Like, oh, okay. I really appreciate that you love goats, but we're not going to bring them into the shala today. Our floors are not built for that. So we can kind of, you know, end that. Some curiosities like that deviate off the path, right? And this also is a form of the way to create that loving atmosphere, encouraging atmosphere for the student. So it's not all just everything you do is awesome. Sometimes what the student is doing is harmful to themselves, and it's harmful to the path, potentially even harmful to the lineage. And it's the teacher's responsibility in that moment to figure out the most, you know, the most approachable way, and yeah, compassionate and effective way to communicate that. Right. And that can be very challenging. A lot of people who do yoga are a little non-confrontational. You know, you see someone and then they brought their goat to class with a bottle of wine and you're like, well, how am I gonna to find the way?
Here we don't have goat, we only have three-legged dog.
Yeah. She already creates enough, you know. Yeah, I think we could open it up to some questions.
Yeah, so that was a little bit of chit-chat from our side. And we thought to do a little Q&A and maybe there's some questions, and I think you probably have some maybe.
Why don't we start with one from the chat, and then yes. People become brave here after the chat.
Charlotte asks, how do we know when we have found a genuine teacher?
Yeah, good question, man. Well, we look, this is where I find that Patanjali is useful. So again, where do we look for that? We look to the yamas. Is this teacher based in the yamas? What are the yamas? Yamas is ahimsa, which means is intently not in a harmful way. In which way? There's no harm going on with this teacher. Secondly, is satya. Is this teacher trustworthy? Is this teacher truthful? Is he telling the truth? Is she he doing what he says and saying what he does? Yeah? And is that there? Next, we say asteya. We say don't take what's not yours. So, for instance, Deborah's process is not my process. I'm here to facilitate Deborah's process, not to push her into my process. If I think that she could do, maybe she could be my star student. Oh, let's make her my star student really quickly so I could get famous. Oh, this is none of my business. You know, that would not be a very good idea. And there's more like that. So we can look to the yamas and we can weigh our teacher up against these five principles. That's a really good start. But by the end of the day, it's like trial by fire. You have to test, you have to be there with that, and you have to figure out over time if it works. There is one indication, though. That is, take a look at the teacher's students and see how they fare. If they are amazing practitioners, but they are all assholes, then there might be an issue. Yeah. There might be an issue with the teacher. Who is he attracting? Who is she attracting?
This is the last part of what you said is how the Dalai Lama suggests to judge a spiritual community. He says that if you want to find a spiritual teacher, go in and look at the long-term students. You know, look at the people who have been practicing whatever that method is for 20 years. And then ask yourself, in 20 years, do I want to be like that? And then if the answer is yes, then continue down the path. Because the teacher might be flawed, but if you like what you see, then you'll be assured to go in that direction. And in that way, we can make space for, you know, the trial and error, and we can use empirical evidence to counteract that kind of feeling of infatuation that we might have for a new teacher. At the same time, there should be something that it like draws you like a moth to a flame, that something is just like, I just want to be around this community, this presence. That's something in you that just says, I just need to be there. I don't know why. I just feel better when I'm there. I need to be there. And then that as long as that is there, plus the empirical evidence, you can probably be assured that you're on the right path. There's a lot of empirical evidence, but you don't feel a pull. It's not your place. You know, something can be really, really awesome, but it's just not for you. So if you feel those two things are present, the empirical evidence, look, the long-term students, they're good. And then I feel, you feel that draw from within, then follow that and make space for, you know, the human error, make space for yourself to get it wrong. Sometimes make space for the teacher to make some mistakes, but understand that together, those two elements are kind of fueling your progress along the path. It's also extremely important to think about that the relationship between the teacher, even if it is a true teacher, will not always be pleasant. There may be times when the teacher is telling you things you don't want to hear. You know, there might be times that you want something from your teacher, your teacher's not giving to you. And this may bring up a lot of difficulty within yourself. And there are many people at that moment that think that now it's time to make a teacher trade. You know, like, let's go around and figure out like who I can trade my teacher for. And we try to make petitions and treat the sort of, you know, practices a little bit like a buffet. Let me go and eat, try a little bit of this, try a little bit of that, and make a new plate. And that can be very damaging to both the teacher and the student, because then, you know, Patabi Joyce and Chatterjee, they both like to say, you know, many doctors can kill one patient. Right. So, you know, or many, you know, a lighter one, right? Like many different cooks make a bad soup, right? I mean, that's maybe more light, right? But then, you know, so then like you think about it, one person says, so you go to one teacher and they say, oh, you should do half primary series. Then the next teacher, no, you should absolutely do full primary series. And the next one says, I think you should do quarter primary series. And the next one is like, you should be doing second. You know, and then you're like, I don't even know what to do anymore. And then you get confusion, but then you end up doing what you like and not really getting taught, you know, by anyone, because we end up trading, trying to figure out which spice and which flavor we like just for that moment. So sometimes a teacher sometimes has, even though they may still meet all the requirements, may share something with you that's not the best news, you know, and they may not give you attention when you want attention. They may give you too much attention when you don't want attention. And in that way, we have to be willing to constantly go back to our rational mind and just say, well, you know, this pull is still there within me. I still benefit from being here. Empirical evidence is still there. Let me not change. Let me stay the path. See what happens. Do we have a question from here? Sure. Alex, let's take your question.
What helps keep you guys going as teachers and students?
So Alex, he asks, what helps Kino and Tim, what helps you guys going? What
keep going.
Keeps you going?
Keeps you going as teachers and students.
We were just in Mysore for a month, and it was really awesome. And we hadn't been since before the pandemic, and I feel like that was a huge big dose of inspiration just to be able to be a student. So for me, I feel that one of the most important qualifications of being a teacher is also making time to be a student, because it's important, so as Tim mentioned earlier, to put on that white belt and just be like, I really have no knowledge of what's, you know, what's here. I need someone, I defer to an authority that's not my own, and to make time for that. Whether that's going to Mysore or and practicing there, if that's you know, for me, you know, Chatterjee is my teacher now, so I go, we're planning to go back again, and I also sit Vipassana. So for me to make time to go and sit meditation retreats, but any place where you're going to go and feel nourished, I think is extremely important to make time for that, to study, whether it's the Yoga Sutras or anatomy or some other texts or anything that's going to give you like a spark that you'll bring into your life. I think it's super important to keep that student attitude.
100%. And I would even go further. Like sometimes I meet some of my colleagues, they say, I don't really need a teacher anymore. I don't need a guru. I don't need someone to tell me to do this or that. I don't need a path in that way. I can, you know, I know enough myself. And when I hear it every time, I'm just like, wow. Like, I could never do it. You know, I need like the path to help me, because without the path, I feel I'm a little bit lost. I'm a little bit by myself. And on a good day, it's not a problem. I can take care of myself just fine. But on a
on a rainy day, that's when I need it. That's when I need my community. That's when I need someone to stand up in front of me and say, do again. That's when I need someone to help me figure out what the next step is. So for me, having practicing with Shut Up and going to my show every year is, I might maybe say life-giving, you know? By the way, the saying is, find the lotus in the mud. Find the diamond in the teacher, not the mud. Yeah, we can always come up with something. Oh, if I look at Amy twice, I can come up with something nasty to say about her. You know what I mean? But is that what I want? You know, that's what, it's that relationship that we try to say. Mm-hmm. Is there something to learn from Amy? You know, look to that. Is Amy perfect? That's another story. By the way, another saying is, your guru should live three valleys over. Don't have them live the same place as you. You see their laundry every day, you're like, ah, no one knows. But that keeps me going. And then one more thing that keeps me going. Like this week, for instance, Thursday, I think we were all tired this week, right? So why did I get out of my bed and practice on Thursday? Because I had to come in here and show some asanas later. Yeah, so maybe if I didn't need to go in and work with some asanas with you guys, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to take a day off and have two cups of coffee. But so the students that I work with, you guys that I work with, you make me, you bring me up to where I want to be. So I say my teacher brings me there and my students bring me there.
Hey there, it's Kino here. I just wanted to take a moment and thank you for tuning in to my show here on UK Health Radio, the world's number one talk health radio. Your support really means the world to me. I'm inspired by the fact that you're inspired and that you tune in each week and keep the inspiration to get on your mat and keep practicing and make the world a happier and more peaceful place. Remember, you can always practice with me on omstars.com. That's www.omstars.com. If you're inspired to read my books, you can check those out on any available online bookseller. Just search for my name, Kino McGregor. And my newest book called Get Your Yoga On is perfect for beginners. You can check that out. Otherwise, stay tuned and I'll see you next week.